You're all astronauts on some kind of Star Trek.
This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Yes, I'm looking for Captain Pike.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. This is part two of our visit to Star Trek The Experience. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Oh, man, I'm a little sad.
Why's that?
Well, you know, as I've been editing this, the Star Trek Experience tour, I've gotten a little more attached to it emotionally as I've gone, and it's now hitting me. It's actually closed.
It is sad. It's hard to watch Star Trek without thinking about all these things behind the scenes that we've seen. It's sort of a cheat sheet, if you will.
I know. You know, I'm sitting here looking at pictures on Flickr. I'm like, oh, can I read the little stickers on the wall?
No. You're giving away stuff in the show.
Oh.
Now, if you're listening to this for the first time, you probably want to go back and listen to the last one about part one. You don't have to, but it'll be a whole lot more fun if you do. It's a continuity thing. There's still a lot of fun stuff in here. Now, in this part, we get behind the scenes on a whole lot more cool stuff.
Yeah, some really cool stuff. We go on the bridge of the Enterprise. We check out how the infamous transporter actually works. The simulators for the shuttles, and all kinds of stuff to see how those run. It's a lot of fun.
And you know what I always thought was one of the coolest things about Star Trek The Next Generation?
What's that?
That was when Geordi LaForge would go from engineering to the bridge and tell the computer, "Computer, transfer engineering to the bridge," and suddenly he'd have full control from another part of the ship.
Yeah, that was cool. You know, you can do that today, right?
You mean fly a starship?
No, remote control your computer from anywhere. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, I know there are several ways you can do it, but what did you have in mind?
You can try Go to My PC for free today for 30 days. Just go to mypc.com/podcast. That's go to mypc.com/podcast for your free trial.
Wow, didn't see that coming.
Neither did I. Shut up and get on with it.
Engage.
I love the fact that the doors just work by themselves.
Yeah, that would be a $10 sensor in this. You can get one at Home Depot, I think.
Same technology grocery stores use.
Isn't that funny? Because people are like, wow, the doors open. I'm like, yeah, they open at the grocery store, too.
Okay, just where have you taken us?
All right, we actually came off the Borg invasion site, and we're now in the pre-show area for the Klingon encounter. So we kind of came back in a circle. Hang on. BST to available lead.
Looks like holiday almost.
If you're in the vicinity, we're ready to do the transporter sequence here. Okay, now, I don't know if you're familiar with the names Rene Echevarria or Kenneth Biller, but just look at any credits since Next Gen, and you'll see Rene Echevarria's name, Kenneth Biller's name. They actually wrote the script for this side of the attraction.
Oh, neat.
And the first draft of that script started on the transporter pad of the Enterprise-D, because they really, that wasn't their job to figure out how, you know, they were going to get there. That was the job of a group called Landmark Entertainment and Scenic Technologies. There were several contractors that worked on this place, Landmark, Scenic, and McFadden for the simulators. Landmark came up with a way that was so simple that most people can't figure out how you get transported.
Like you said, best illusions are the simple ones.
That's right. And, you know, they go, oh, the sliding elevator.
No, you don't feel movement.
No,
that's the trick.
Very, very simple. And what we've done is we brought up the work lights in here, and we are actually going to run that sequence for you with the lights on so that you
sweet!
See it.
Okay, now let me describe what we've got. When we first walk in, you're taken into this fairly small room, maybe 14
like
by 12. Yeah, there's four doors in front of us, like you're going to be boarding a ride or something. And the floor is very innocuous.
Yes, it's just kind of a
it's gray. There's a circle in the middle with some, it looks like duct tape running out. And you'd think there's seams
here. Duct tape used extensively on starships in the 24th century.
Actually, I thought duct tape was part of the Star Wars uniform universe. Because it has a light side and a dark side, and it binds the universe together.
If you look closely, you'll see duct tape. We've been using it for a long time. But no, I think that's a different kind of tape holding that together. But anyway, so we bring you in here, and usually the lights are not this bright.
Right.
Generally speaking. And we line you up very carefully in front of these four doors, and we show you a safety video up there that we're not going to show you, because we want you to see exactly what happens.
Oh, but I like the pregnant lady.
The pregnant lady, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he abandons his wife. See you, love.
I know. So what it does show is these doors popping open and people walking across onto some obvious simulator, but that's not what happens at all. Okay, now, in order for this to happen, it takes about 30 seconds once we do this.
There's a magic
floor pad right there.
Which is why the attendant... make sure everybody's away from the walls and away from the doors.
Right. Okay, now, in order for this to happen, we have to say on the count of three, beam me up, Scotty. One, two, three.
Beam me up, Scotty.
Do you hear that, Scotty?
This is where careful editing comes in.
Yeah, I think Scotty heard it, and it's going to take a few seconds, like I said, because things are happening.
Scotty, would be a good time.
You would be watching the safety video at this point. You're going to see the lights go down a little bit, but they're not going out completely. And when you see the lights flash, I want you to look up, and you will see how we transport you. It's very simple, okay?
We're looking up. The lights have gone down.
Okay.
Lights flash. Stars.
Keep looking up.
Wow.
Down at the floor. And here we are. Thank you, Scotty. Nicely done. Okay, go ahead and stand right here while I tell you exactly what happened. While we're being distracted by that silly safety video, see that panel, that pink panel right there?
Yes.
That is actually sliding down out of the ceiling to cover the doors that were standing open there. Yes, very slowly. And it's hydraulic. Everything's hydraulic in here.
So the door we entered to our left is now covered. It's still there, but it's behind a curved panel.
Right. That's part of the transport.
It looks somewhat like a sun logo.
Right. I guess.
For those who reference that.
So anyway, once it hits the floor and once the computer has decided that it's safe to do so, you saw me standing on that little foot pad back there?
There it is.
There is, but that one is disabled.
Okay.
That tells the computer that nobody's leaning on the wall.
Because you don't want anybody leaning on the wall. What happened to the walls we saw?
That's right. It's not going to be there momentarily. So when the computer decides it's all safe, the room... which is not attached to the floor at all. See, we did not move. Everything moves around us. And it flies up about 60 miles an hour, about 40 feet from here to where it ends up. That takes about 2.5 seconds. Now, that room weighs 7,000 pounds, but it has an 8,000-pound counterweight on it, and that's what's pulling it up so fast. And the hydraulics are to keep it down, basically. The hydraulics are to keep it down, because once the hydraulics, the whole thing goes up.
I don't have a windscreen on this microphone, so you probably heard there was quite a breeze when that happened.
That's true. That's true, because a lot of people think, wow, my molecules are being transported across the galaxy.
It was a breeze.
That's right. It's nothing but physics, really. When you pull something away that fast, it creates a vacuum, and air rushes in to fill that vacuum. So, yeah. And then the ceiling slides across, of course, on what I can only describe as a giant rubber band. It just flings it right into place like a big dinner plate. Yep. And that all happens in complete and total darkness. And the sound effect that goes along with it is so loud you can barely hear yourself think.
Actually, when the roof slides in, the sound effect kind of adds to the whole thing.
Yeah, and it's a really, really cool, loud sound effect. And if you listen carefully, you can actually hear Klingon laughter in it.
We're going to replay that. I can hear that.
Korath is actually laughing because he thinks he's gotten you.
Subtle but effective.
Yeah, it's interwoven in there somewhere, and if you don't know to look for it, you can't hear it. But, it's pretty awesome.
Brilliant.
And then, of course, we're standing on Lexan. And Lexan, it basically is opaque unless there's light shining up through it, and the outline of the transporter pad is underneath that Lexan. So people are like, what do you do to the floor? We turned on the lights.
That's it.
That's all. Very, very simple.
The floor changes, the walls change, the ceiling slides in, and you are in a transporter room.
That's right. It's pretty awesome, huh?
Now, I'm dying to see the other side of this. It looks like...
It's
a transporter pad.
Yeah, this is this stuff.
The top side does.
Yes. We've got Scotty's a little addition.
And this is, of course, the actual, this is the maintenance area, but this is how we run it from here. And, of course, then we can push that in so that if anybody should come over here and look, they won't see anything. But, yes, this is how we can tell.
There's a little drawer that comes out from the base.
Yes.
You know, it could cleverly be concealed as a cup holder.
And, of course, they have cup holders on the Enterprise.
There's got to be. I mean, there's 18 of them in my minivan. Okay, now in this side of the exhibit, you mentioned there were two. This side, you turn right. The other one was turned left. Refit yeah. with all the dead ends and dead men and things.
Right. Now, this, of course, is the same kind of a corridor that on the other side had Ensign and Deadman in it. Oh, and this is what I was going to point out to you. These little stickers have little goodies on them, the little tiny words.
We must read more.
Fabulous hidden gems of Star Trek.
Panel 108. Oh, that's also the bus you can take from here to Fremont Street.
But they have things like song lyrics on them. And
caution, fuse in this unit should only be replaced with a like amperage value slow blow type AG3 mil spec contract.
Yeah, that's probably something that somebody just, you know.
They like pulled that off
of their tech manual or something.
This device is certified as FCC Class C computing device. Please remove the batteries if devices not being used for extended periods.
And then?
What do you got?
Engineering Systems. Kilroy was here. Published simultaneously in all galaxies. What? Me worry. If found, please drop into my mailbox. Postage prepaid.
Oh, wait. One before we go. This is 101, the EPS power system. Daisy, give me your answer, too. I am half crazy in the love of you.
Now, you know, that's a reference to 2001,
yes.
A Space Odyssey.
Yep. That's right.
Yes. And there is the lyrics to Gilligan's Island over there, by the way.
Oh, these guys had fun because they knew nobody would stop and read them.
That's, well, actually, these are straight from the set, so they knew that nobody at home would ever see this stuff.
Because they only do long shots.
That's right.
And
that's
moving.
Right. But you've seen these before, but you've never had a chance to look up close at them.
Oh, that's spectacular.
Oh, yeah. And this is the ingredients to Coca-Cola right there.
Panel 260, Science Data Net 14-890. Sugar, malic acid, tricalcium phosphate, maltodextrin, caramel color. Contents may have settled during shipping.
Or photon fire.
Don't tug on Superman's cape.
Don't spit into the wind.
That's right. Don't pull the
Jim Croce. I was singing that on the trip out here.
Just stuff that they knew that nobody at home would ever see. But, of course, the actors and the techs and, you know, anybody on the sets at Paramount would get a... You know,
so these are actual panels from the set. That's...
Well, the panels were made for us.
Okay.
But the little stickers are right from the workshops
at
Paramount.
That's too much.
Yeah.
Cool. It's a shame no one will see this after we tell them.
Okay, welcome to the bridge.
I love this. This is great. And this is the second set of the bridge because true Trekkies would notice that in the first season, these panels along the wall were brown.
Yes, they were.
These
darker
are the white
color.
And when they refit it, it reminded me of an old VAX computer. So I thought they actually went backwards in technology for
a while. Well, you know, this is towards the middle or end of the run of Next Gen, the way the bridge looks here. But this is as close as you're going to get to being on the bridge of an actual starship.
We're there. We are there.
We use the schematics that we use to build the sets. But really, honestly, this is not like a set on a soundstage. This is called a permanent set. Sets on soundstages are called breakaway sets, and they're not complete like this one.
Yeah, you can remove panels because the camera's got to shoot at different angles.
Right, but because this is an immersive attraction, we didn't want you to have any inkling. If you had a big hole over there, that wouldn't be quite...
It really does take away. There are a couple of shots in Star Trek Next Generation, probably other shows, where you know somebody's walking by something reflective and you can see, you know, the director is over there is like, oh, that spoils it.
We had to
is that somebody chewing gum?
We had to do a couple of things differently here just because of what we do. We actually had to move the ops and con chair about 2 feet farther apart from where they are on the series.
Sure. Yeah.
That was because we put the guests back there behind the tactical console. And so in order for them to see the view screen and not the backs of our heads, we just moved them about 2 feet farther apart. The other thing we did was lower this whole back area behind tactical.
It does look a little lower.
It is lower, and that was for safety. We didn't want anybody to trip, fall, or come rolling down in a wheelchair and end up in the in the middle of the screen. You know, so that,
that would be bad.
Yeah, well, it would be interesting to
That's
watch.
That's a new ride.
Yeah. But other than that, well, we actually pushed the back row of panels back 2 feet as well.
I was going to say, there's a little more room.
It's a little more room, but that's, again, we have to have 27 people, and the county requires so many feet per, you know, that was a that kind of thing.
The beauty of this wood is just, that's always captivated
me. Except for it's not wood.
This is not wood? Is it, like, veneered? Painted? It's painted. Painted fiberglass.
How many times per car?
Oh, I'm like... Yeah, that always seemed like a tripping hazard on the show.
Oh, and, you know, we've actually tripped over those things a couple of times.
It's not just me.
And these Akut Grants have more goodies on them as well.
The whole science station is back here. Engineering.
Everybody's name is on here somewhere, and it's the first two letters of their first name and the first three letters of their last name. So.
Even on the show, these are panels from the set.
Well, these are not the same pieces of glass, but it's the same. Well, they're silk screens. Yes. Yeah, so if Michael Akuta has all these silk screens in his workshop, and he's made different ones for us.
Neat. And the monitors are showing you flying through space.
And in particular, they all go to red alert at a certain point.
Oh,
this
neat.
One goes to Korath. When Korath is on the screen over there, this one goes to, we pull up library information on Korath, and it comes up on the screen, so it's pretty awesome. Now, this is my favorite panel because this has the really esoteric and strange things on it, the rubber ducky.
What? You look on the bridge and there's, I mean, wouldn't that normally be perceived as a chair? There's a little car.
There's a car.
With the shuttle. An airplane?
That's right.
You look through this schematic and there's all kinds of little weird hidden pictograms.
Now some of these things, like that looks like a boat or something, but it's really not.
Okay.
It has, if you have the NCC-1701D technical manual, most of this stuff is explained, but there's no explanation for the duck, there's no explanation for the car, and there's no explanation for the plane, but legend has it that that's Gene Roddenberry's plane. Because he was a World War II fighter pilot and
No. We found out where Amelia Earhart went.
Oh, well, that could be. I think Voyager found her, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So actually, legend has it that Michael Akuta parked Gene's plane in the shuttle.
Any significance to the numbers that you know of?
Well, you know, there's a big brouhaha over the number 47, which is supposed to be some kind of thing to do with Gene Roddenberry, but actually, I mean, you can go on, there are websites devoted to Star Trek and the number 47, so I'm not going to get into it, but it's like all kinds of weird little things, but 47 is all over the place here. Now,
you are hardcore. Yeah. Now we're really looking for the 47.
Yeah, 47's all over the place, but like exactly why there's kind of an argument about that, but supposedly it was Gene Roddenberry's lucky number or his favorite number or something like that, but I think there's more to it than that. So
it was his answer to everything in the Star Trek universe.
Oh, okay.
That's right. It had to go five better than five.
Yeah. And you can feel the rumble in here as well. Is that the subwoofer or is that the AC?
That's the subwoofers. Okay. Yeah. Another thing, it's hard to see here, but you can kind of see the light streaking by at work when they bring the lights up for the BSD.
Oh, for crying out loud. Yeah, looking out the skylight.
Really hard for them to figure out. I know that when I was here, when this place was under construction, they actually couldn't figure out how to do that. They had to have a couple of lighting designers come in and figure it out. And basically it's just kind of, I'm not sure if neon is the gas, but it's a gas tubing lighting. And it's only illuminated when it's traveling in that direction.
Yeah.
And then when it's pulled back through the tube, it's dark. So that makes it look like it's all going in one direction. Very simple.
We're
again,
zipping
very,
by the lights.
Very tricky.
Craig, would you like to sit in the chair?
Can I?
Go ahead. Just don't stay there all day. We got work to do.
Oh, and even the plaque, right down to the last detail.
Yes. And if you'll notice, those plaques have people from our century on them, actually. You know, I mean, it's everybody who had anybody to do with Trek over the years.
Let's go take a look. Well, Craig is trying out the chair.
USS Enterprise, Galaxy Class, Starfleet Registry, NCC-1701-D, Utopia Planitia Fleet Yards, Mars. Fifth starship to bear the name, launch stardate 40759.5, United Federation of Planets. So, Captain Herman Zimmerman.
Herman Zimmerman, he was the production supervisor.
Yep. Then he turned dark on us.
Turned dark.
Although you gotta admit the Borg are kinda dark already.
Right in here.
So we hop into the faulty turbo lift.
Well, it's not faulty until it goes through a power loss. That's right. So of course you find out that one of you's Picard's ancestor, and since we don't know who it is, we gotta get you all, you know.
Oh, wait,
could be. No, that's okay. It's okay to be Picard's ancestor. So we put you on this turbo lift and we send you down to the shuttle bay. So I'm gonna start the turbo lift.
By pressing buttons 1 and 2.
That's right. And we start the show. Now they've actually turned the sound off so you can hear me, but the movement and the lights will continue. So as you know, a turbo lift goes sideways, and that's there's a light panel here that's showing going sideways. Now we're going down, and we're supposed to go to deck 4, but right when we hit deck 4, we get into a firefight with a renegade Klingon who's trying to kill us, okay? So we're falling, although you pretty much figured out we're not falling.
Right.
What we're doing is rotating. But with the sound effect, it really does,
shaking,
it really does give the impression that we're falling. We're actually rotating about 160 degrees onto top of a standard military tank turret. That's the mechanism that's moving us around. And those little bumps you feel are hydraulic actuators. They're about 3 inches high, and they're just bouncing up and down maybe 3/4 of an inch. They're not moving too much, but they're moving at different intervals, so that's what's throwing you off balance. So, okay, we get saved. We don't die. And here we are back in the Grand Corridor. I think we're going this way. Yeah.
Back to the giant gerbil balls.
Okay. Yes, remember when we sneaked in? We sneaked in right here.
Was it like upwards or down?
No. We didn't go up or down at all.
Everything, that's right. All we did was turn. Everything happens on one level here. And then we bring you into this staging area.
I'm mentally mapping this out in my mind because when you first come into the attraction, you go upstairs, get your ticket, walk around the exhibits, and you enter at that level.
You enter.
But
upstairs.
Yet when you exit, you're downstairs at the
Well, that's because
shop.
We send you down an elevator.
Oh, that's I missed
that. That part they do use more than one level.
That's right.
And I missed
people,
that.
And most people are like, I don't want to get on there. And no, it's really just
an
elevator.
Well, you probably have to be at a higher level for all this because you have some things that are like you said, the tank turret was under.
On the lower level, that's where we have all the equipment for all this.
This is Dr. Michio Kaku, professor of theoretical physics, author of the new book, Physics of the Impossible. Yet, I can't even figure out Technorama.
Come out of the turbo lift, and we're being brought to the shuttle bay, which seems a little crazy because during a battle you wouldn't send a shuttle out.
Well, you know, we have to though because it's very critical that the only way we can get you back through the rift is, you know, if we get you off the Enterprise, and the Enterprise is going to keep the Klingons busy while we look for the rift.
Okay, that's the logic.
Right. So we put you in here, and this is where we show you the real safety video. The other one in the transporter room
is a distraction.
It's a distraction. That's
really?
Right. And this one stars Geordi. And talks about the safety features of the shuttle that you're about to board. And then with a great deal of noise and flourish, this bay door goes up, but that's just sound effects. So hopefully we're on the phone today. Let's see what happens.
I'll work this interface over here.
Yeah. Now, there are actually things that work on here.
That's why I'm not touching.
Touch it.
Oh, wait. We've opened the door, and we're greeted with
a
big flat. The ramp.
Yeah.
The ramp is up. And we're being greeted by a flat panel display.
This is the flat panel display.
Running Windows 3.1?
So you noticed that. You noticed
that.
Oh,
my gosh.
This is Windows 3.1. In fact, it's the same stuff that when I tested this equipment was running it. But here's the deal. Each one of these computers has, these shuttles has its own dedicated computer. All it does is run this one particular piece of equipment. That's all it has to do, and that's all it's done all day for almost 11 years.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
You know what? It makes complete sense.
Yep.
You know, it's still a lot of people are like, what? But no, I mean, you know, you can only find 3.1, I think, in the Smithsonian or something. But
I noticed that when we walked out.
And my shelf at home.
And your shelf at home.
Yeah,
shelf. It's a nostalgia trip, isn't it, to look at that? Yeah, but like I said, it works. It's worked consistently over the past couple of years, so why not? You know,
stick it back up.
Yeah.
I'll bet it wasn't on a flat screen back then.
No, the flat screen is fairly new.
It's a Borg.
I'm there. This is Gene, and he's been here longer than I have, but when he was here, he worked with Scenic Tech building this place. So here's a guy who knows all about this stuff.
He knows every wire going through the walls.
He does, actually. So this is the...
What?
Complete with sound effects.
Yes.
And the side of the shuttle opens up, and we're greeted with the stunner.
Oh, thanks.
This is the minivan version of the shuttle.
Just for a few seconds. That's right. Well, it's a transport shuttle. You know, you transport 27 people.
Wait a minute. DeLorean, Gullwing.
That's right.
Time travel. It all makes sense.
It makes sense.
Marty, we've got to get back to Star Trek experience.
But, Doc.
But the whole idea in here is to kind of create this little envelope of light right in front of you so you don't notice the fabulous 70-foot screen out there.
Oh, sure enough, there it is.
There it is. See, it goes all the way down here. Most people don't even notice it. It goes all the way up there and about 20 feet from where we are down here.
So
it's 70 feet in diameter. But we really don't want the guests to notice that. We want them to think they're on a shuttlecraft that's experience of power.
It's an illusion. It's where you draw their attention.
That's right. And with, you know, without the lights on in there and just the lights on in here, it does kind of look just murky out there. You're really not aware of all that stuff. What we're sitting on is one of two simulators in this theater. Now, the other simulator's over there, and generally you can't see it from here. When we go underneath this, you'll be able to see it.
Yeah, you can see the dash.
Yeah, you can kind of, but most people aren't really looking over there.
So that's still in place from the old attraction?
Yeah, well, we actually we can run them both together, or run them separately. We're running this one today because we're not expecting to be that busy.
Mm-hmm.
So they do actually work in tandem, basically.
Okay.
But yes, a simulator, by the way, you probably know, is not a roller coaster. That's what I tell people. It's not on any kind of track. It's on legs. In this case, there are six legs.
It's a little motion.
Yes, it's a motion simulator. The legs are about 4 feet long, and they have about a 2.5 foot reach.
Okay.
And so, but when we go underneath, we'll see that whole thing. And it's hydraulics. You know, it's all about hydraulics.
Yep.
Yeah. So it actually moves in accordance with what you see on the screen. It moves according to 6 degrees of freedom. Pitch, yaw, sway, roll, surge, heave, that kind of thing, which is kind of up, down, side, side, back and forth, basically. But ride designers have a very simple program. It has to be simple because it's Windows 3.1.
Yeah, right.
And it hooks up with the
either
projector.
Does solitaire or runs the simulator.
That's right. In fact, sometimes it can do both. But it hooks up with the projector. And the projector is a 4 minute, it's a 70 millimeter projector. Mm. It's film. 4 minute movie.
It's kind of like an IMAX thing.
No, people think it's an IMAX, but it's actually a fisheye lens, which really is hard to see from here.
Well, I was thinking when you said 70 millimeter, isn't that what the IMAX uses?
No, 70 is standard.
70
cinema.
Standard. Oh, yeah. Okay. 70 IMAX standard. Is like this big.
Oh, wait. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think that's like 2.5 inches or something of that nature. But it runs for 4 minutes, and the first 2 minutes was all CGI. That was all created in the Paramount Studios. The last 2 minutes, where you fly through the temporal rift and you're flying over
Las Vegas
and back here to the Hilton, that was filmed in Vegas. And what they did was shut down portions of the strip for hours at a time, and a stunt pilot flew a helicopter with a camera mounted underneath it down the strip.
Wow!
And then, of course, they put in
the effects after that.
Oh my gosh, that guy was nuts. I mean, it's a good thing they had cleared out all the traffic because, you know, they had some stunt cars driving around. But I would have liked to have seen that, but I didn't know they were doing it. Okay,
I gotta ask you a question.
Yes.
Before we move out of here.
Oh, Craig's. Is there a camera inside this that you can see?
Yes, there are.
Okay.
Because there's actually a camera right there. Because if you touch anything, they'll.
I'll tell you what happened. I was sitting in this chair right here.
That's right.
Chuck's wife was sitting right in front of me,
and I'm right in back of him.
Yeah, he's behind me. The door closed, And I said, I touched Donna on the shoulder and said, watch this. And I was hitting the buttons, and all of a sudden, blah, 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 even the guy touching the buttons.
And, and they railed on me the whole time.
Yeah, well, I mean... that's right. I mean, because of safety concerns, we have to monitor you. Think you're alone in there, you're not alone in there. We're watching you to make sure that everything's okay. So, yes, we did see you. All right, let's go back to this.
He's the button pusher guy from yesterday. One of, I'm sure.
Oh, yes. It's all the, in fact, one of the things you notice about those screens is all the fingerprints on them.
I was going to say, somebody's got to polish... the torpedo tube, or the photon torpedo for Spock.
We can't go in here. What do we got here? Because those are the
motion control.
The motion simulator control, and this is the sound, the triad. I don't know if you're familiar with triad, but triad is a show control system.
I've heard of it.
Yes, triad is the overriding show control system here. Now, each, like I said, each piece of equipment has a dedicated computer, but Triad is the one that links all those things together so that the show's sequence...
Much like a PLC kind of thing for manufacturing, where you put in the instructions and... Okay.
Right, and it's the overriding...
So we've got a couple of racks with their keyboards and over on the side some 20th century control panel. There's nothing futuristic in here.
No,
but oh, there's the camera for you to see the button pusher guys.
But of course, like I said, it's the illusion, you know. So we're using ancient equipment to run, you know, 24th century technology.
Something just started.
Yeah, that's the show. We're actually going to go underneath and we'll watch it from there. It's awesome.
Are there people in there right now, or is he just running a test?
He's just running the test.
Okay. I'm sorry. What was his name?
That was Gene.
Gene. Easy to remember.
Yeah, and I remember Gene from, you know, when I was here. We both had hard hats. He knows a lot more about this equipment, like the specs of it, than I do. He's been working on it for 11 years. We put these up here for our guests, but I'm sure you will find them of great interest.
Come through the hallway to the...
Yeah, this is just a basic, you know, back hallway, but we decorated it with... pictures of the construction of this place back in 97. Well, this
is this the frame of the big sign out front?
They were building that sign at the time.
Because the smaller sign is still there for the Hilton. And now they've got the big Hilton sign that says Star Trek Experience right on it.
Under construction. Again, this place was originally, where we're standing, was actually a parking lot, basically. Oh. So this whole place had to be built for a 60,000 square feet facility.
And this lovely blue facade with the whole sign is now obscured with the monorail.
That's right.
So you can tell things have been added on.
Our shuttles, by the way, were built by a group called McFadden Industries, and they started out building simulators to train jet pilots, that kind of simulators. And then they started building things for us. They don't exist anymore. I think they lowballed themselves out of existence, unfortunately.
So, yeah, we've got pictures of the frames on a flatbed truck. They're being lowered in by a helicopter or a crane.
They actually had to lower them in.
So they actually did simulators for Starfleet pilots, I guess.
I suppose. But, I think it's pretty cool. These huge steel frames were created at McFadden, and then they shipped them here on flatbeds and lowered them in with cranes. And so they couldn't finish the theater until the framework of the shuttle was in place. So the roof of the theater didn't exist, basically, until after the shuttles had
been loaded. How do they get them out?
That, we're not really sure. I think it depends on, because it's up in the air what they're going to do with this stuff. Mm-hmm. So...
make a dandy home theater.
Yeah.
Theoretically, you cut it and pull it out in pieces.
They can, but if they want to save them, they may have to, once again, take the roof off. It depends on what they're going to do with these things. So
someone's got to be thinking about that,
there are people that have been thinking about it, but they haven't let that, you know, we don't know what's going to happen.
I'm letting my project manager hat get on again.
And this is
the model construction.
Yeah,
yes.
Model construction.
Boy, they look bigger when you put people next to them.
Oh, they're just beautiful, aren't they?
Now is no, because this is complete. These that's are, not the gentleman.
No,
that
no,
we're
none of these guys
earlier.
Are the guy that I met. He's got a website, and I can't remember the website, but I went and checked it out because I'm thinking, well, I'm going to make sure this guy's on the up and up. And sure enough, nice website. And if you go into the history, it says Star Trek: The Experience. You click on it; it's him standing next to the the saucer section with the actual model right there. So that's a cool picture.
Hey, I have to say, this one right here, it looks like Starfleet wimped out on the space dock. It's got a
one arm.
Just tie it up.
It's the Enterprise, the original.
If you look at how they're they're held up there. They've got these huge poles that are holding them. They have to lift them into place.
This looks funny all tied up.
Yeah.
Oh, that is on site, isn't it? Yes. That's here being lifted up into the exhibit.
This is on site.
Says the bean.
Some of these are being constructed in the garage.
This is on site. This is on site.
Putting the saucer section onto the...
Yeah, because they were so huge, they had to bring them in two pieces.
Wow. With scaffolding all around.
Are you in any of these pictures? I am not in any of these pictures.
Here, just get over there.
Oh. Now you're in a picture.
Hey, good.
And then the rest of the site construction.
Yeah, that's just basic site construction out there. This one's like old home week because this you could take a picture. I mean, in front of this one because this is how I remember it when I was
with plastic hanging around and paint
this is
and
the bridge. See, the bridge was under construction at this time. Yeah. All the different parts of the bridge here.
Laying around all in disarray. Uh-huh. It looks like after they crashed.
Yeah. Yes, very similar. So, yeah, this
is... The plastic's still on the chairs.
This is how I remember it when I first got here. Oh, I'm going to miss it. Oh.
Hi, this is Nidwai from Dads and His Elves. And by the time I'm 18 years old, I'll need to know the binary language of moisture evaporators. Therefore, I listen to Technorama with your hosts, Chuck Tomasi and Dwight Stepp.
This is where... the magic happens. Well, it starts, basically. This is where those of us who do character work out on the floor, this is where we put our makeup on. And as I said, Michael Westmore, who designed all this stuff, has actually been here a couple of times to give us pointers or basically sit down with us, kind of do like a one-on-one workshop with me. I have his handwritten notes from, how to be an Andorian, basically, you know, how to be a Vulcan. There are some things that are really, really just a little too much for us to do personally because we do have to put our own makeup on. Mm-hmm. And we could never do this. You know, if you wanted to look like this, you'd have to spend 4 hours in a makeup chair with different prosthetics glued to you, the whole thing latexed, and then the whole thing airbrushed, and we can't do that. So he creates these one-piece heads for us. Now, these have seen better days. They're pretty chewed up, but that gives you the opportunity to give him a little umox.
Yeah.
Ooh. Ah. Whatever floats your boat. Yeah. Anyway.
So what's the ruling of who gets to wear the curtain on the back of their head?
Oh, well, everybody gets to wear the curtain on the back of their head because it covers up the Velcro, because that's how you get in and out of these things, basically. This one's a little shabby, but...
Yeah, that one's seen better days.
Yeah.
That's needs to retire.
Yes, he's pretty raggedy.
Did he ever retire?
I don't know. No, they just die and their desiccated remains are sold on eBay. So, yeah, same thing with the Borg. Now, it's made out of foam latex. Mm-hmm. So it's lightweight, but still you don't want to be in it for too long. And the Borg one is made out of the same stuff, but it has a coating of latex paint over the top of it so that they can get that mottled look in there. And then automotive tubing, that's all that is.
I knew it.
That's right. And then just whatever little LED lights that this one's gone.
I use a bigger version of that stuff to keep all the cables to my computer in order on my desk
at
work.
So it's the stuff that...
It's got the split in it?
Yes,
yeah,
it does.
That's the stuff.
Absolutely.
Nerd. I don't know, maybe my computer desk is part Borg.
So it can take up to 2 hours for us to put on makeup. And for instance, when I'm an Andorian, I'm blue all over. I don't have anything like this. Mm-hmm. You know, plus on top of that, I have to look like a girl. I can't just paint myself blue.
Wig.
Yeah, there's a lot of shading and stuff like that goes on. So that takes a while. And it can take as long to get it off at the end of the day because there's a lot of blue there.
I'm going to do a full shower to get some of
Well, I stick my whole face in the sink, basically, and my hands. My hands are even more difficult, actually, than face because we use, see right there? These are our high-tech pieces of equipment, a blow dryer and Aquanet.
Yeah.
The baby powder's covered with like orange makeup.
Yeah, we use powder. What we do, so if you want the secret of hands, of making your hands a different color, you can do this on your face, but I wouldn't recommend it. You paint yourself, like water base or grease paint, doesn't really matter what. And if it's water base, it has to dry. Then you take powder and you powder it and get all the excess powder off. Then you spray it. You hit it with the purple Aquanet until it's wet, and then you blow dry it. And then once it's dry, it's not coming off. so I can shake your hand.
I should have done that with my Borg temporary tattoo.
Oh, that's cool.
I got my barcode on my ring.
I was telling her that was the UPC code for dork.
I wanted different numbers for my book.
You should go to the grocery store and see if that scans, and see what, see how much you're worth.
What, my net worth?
That's right.
That's a new way of measuring it.
It's awesome. Oh, dear. All right, follow this way.
I showed that to the ride attendant after we got off the Borg invasion. I went, I got a souvenir.
He's like, so we come out into the business area of the attraction.
This is where we entered.
Yeah. So this is where we come and go on a daily basis, and we're back in front of Ops Base. And basically, there's a very strict communication protocol, and that's her job, is to make sure that the right message
gets out.
Your
command central, Jane.
Janine?
It's nice to meet you.
Thank you.
I noticed there are a lot of radios you're using to communicate between each other.
We are communicating all the time, you know, because we need to know where people are in the attraction. Well, there's, as you notice, a lot of sensitive and potentially dangerous equipment. Stuff happens to it, you know, not on a regular basis, but it does happen. Yeah. So, you know, it's her job to make sure the right message gets to the right person. So that's her job. Oh, remember I told you about the first
there
picture that was up there?
Yep.
Yeah, and so now you know why Jerry Ryan was not particularly thrilled about that.
Oh, and Kes is not in the one upstairs.
No, she's not, because she, you know,
she was taken out. Yep.
Had some crazy thing happen to her, whatever. All right, follow me this way.
We've got people in costume ahead of us.
This is, we're doing a pre-shift. This is, a pre-shift is before we actually go, the actors actually go up into the attraction.
I have to confess, I have the full size.
You have the big one?
Full size of just about every movie pre-poster and production poster.
Cool.
And the production one for Undiscovered Country is dated 11-13. It's not 96, 91? 91 or 92. Yeah, it said November 13th. And when somebody realized they were going to be competing with Hook, you know, the Dustin Hoffman movie, they moved it up a week to 11-6. So the production one says 11-6, but the pre-production says 11-13.
Well, then I got to show you this then.
Oh, what have we got?
We actually opened late. We were supposed to open in May of 2007.
Oh, really?
Or summer of 2000.
There
See,
it is.
See, it says starting spring 1997. I'm living in the recent past instead of the actual past. Yes, starting spring 1997.
Right,
we didn't open until 1998. So these posters were,
Where can I get one?
I think that's the only one that's left.
Poster and no, that's good.
Yes, we actually have things like Holodeck 2 down here. We try to keep the theming consistent.
Even behind the scenes.
Even behind
that's
the
terrific.
Scenes. And if we're not using something out on the floor, we're using it up here.
This is neat. There's a map of the U.S. on the wall with where each of the employees are from.
Oh, yeah, we did that.
That's kind of neat.
Levels of acquisition. The Ferengi made this map.
Wow. The Louisiana Purchase. Team meeting over. No red shirts going out. It's a good sign. It's a good day.
It's a good day.
We have more employee turnover that way.
So if an employee gets the red shirt for the day, they're in trouble, right?
Yeah, it's a sign you're going to be fired. All right, we cross over into a room labeled VEER.
Oh, yes, this is our video engineering room. That's our audio engineering room. And behind this... Oh, he needs to go in there, so he wants me to open the door.
He's got a replacement card for something.
That's right. We're actually not allowed in there, but even though the techs are here, we're going to do it anyway. Behind here, we have...
Look the other way, Gene. Look, it's the Borg!
We have 68 amps, and we're powering about 42,000 watts through those amps. And the techs hate it when I So did you need to go in there?
No, but the effect for the audio program is great.
Isn't
obviously, you're not supposed to go in there.
That's right. They don't want us in there. But we
now
go
we go into the video room, and it's
That's
less obnoxious.
to show pictures that say keep.
Yeah.
Okay, watch out because there's some steering.
Watch your step.
And we're going through these show control panels here, and this is CSS Triad.
I see an HP Vectra VL. Once again, we are using the most out of our assets.
That's right.
Well, there's some upgraded servers over here.
You know, some of it's been upgraded.
A few racks worth of stuff. This is
Windows 98 drivers.
Windows 98 drivers. CD. Yeah, see, there's a hard drive. CD. This looks like any typical server rack.
Yeah.
But it's mostly around video equipment.
Yeah.
Oh, and we're downstairs underneath the simulators.
Oh, cool.
Go ahead and step right out up to the big center.
And up to the big screen. It's a huge deflector dish.
The Death Star.
Aimed right at the simulators. That's not easy.
It's the Death Star.
And from down here, you get an excellent view of the gimbals and the piping and everything that drives the simulators.
Because they're going to want us to... And there's Brad up there. Hello, Brad. Brad is actually going to run about 30 to 45 seconds of the show.
Oh, beautiful.
In the theater, but we're going to leave the lights on because I really want you to see what's going on underneath here. These are our two simulators in this theater. That was the one that was on the other side that's running. That's not running today. It's idle. This is the big framework, as you can see, with the big legs. These things weigh 18,000 pounds and can carry up to a 12,000-pound payload. But when it's flying around over your head, don't worry, it's very safe, because I tested it myself. These are the things that I ran through about 500 cycles.
This is where the fluid squirted out?
Yeah. These legs, well, you know, it's still, occasionally there's a little leak, but it's very typical of these kinds of things. But the techies told me, you know, when we're building this, that it takes about 2 years to break these pieces of equipment in. But they're very well broken in at this point. So he's going to run that for us. And, oh, there's the fisheye lens right up there.
Oh, yeah, there's the fisheye
lens. Yeah, like I said.
Wow, that big image out of that lens.
That tiny little, it's about 10 inches in diameter.
That's huge.
But that's the thing that throws the image onto this screen. Now, we won't be able to see the image too much here because I really want you to see what's going on underneath here. It's just so amazing.
The doors close, the ramp goes up. At this point, the guests are being given their orientation.
Right,
and
I had a guy from NASA come through on one of my tours when I first started doing the tours, and he came under here and he went, "Wow, we don't have anything this nice at NASA."
Oh.
I don't know if that was sad or funny, but I laughed. Anyway, okay, here we go. It's going to get really loud in here, so watch out for that. About 42,000 watts.
I see another prop back there. Is that a leftover?
Yeah, it's probably a leftover from the other theater, which used to look just like this. Here we go.
So to simulate thrust, they tilt you back in your seat, but they let you. But the image has to correspondingly tip up.
Well, I should probably wait until this is over before I describe it to you. Pretty awesome.
So,
huh?
Yeah, you get a good view down here of the hydraulics, the gimbals, I believe they call them, moving
actuators.
It's really
right
throwing that thing, and that's
really
the size of a Mack truck up there.
Well, it's got about a 12-foot from one end to the other range. I mean, you know, the legs are only 4 feet long, and each has a 2.5-foot reach, but when you put it all together...
Yeah, and where they're really positioned in the center gives it maximum leverage.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and... it runs through its entire range in under 2 seconds and pulls over a G of force.
And you can feel that, because when you want to simulate thrust, your body is going to get pushed back into the seat.
Right.
So what do? You tip it up and let gravity push you back into the seat.
Yeah.
But correspondingly, you've got to get the image
tipped up so people don't, you know, they're not looking down going, what?
Well, what they did was actually to get this going, it's a very, very simple program. It's almost the same as like a music program, only it, you know, the notes correspond to the legs, basically, and a very, very simple. And the guy, the ride designer, I actually got to sit with him while he was creating this ride. It was, very cool. And so we'd do it a section at a time, and then when it was all done, every portion, we'd come out, we'd pop it in the computer, we'd run out here, we'd belt ourselves in, and we'd run it through.
And say, does this work?
That's right, because, you know, you had to make sure that it was, that what you wanted to look at on the screen was in the center of the screen, you know? And so it was just a matter of making sure that that happened, making sure that the bumps were not so bumpy that somebody would get whiplash, but bumpy enough so that they would be excited about it, you know? So, yeah, a couple of those bumps were my invention. I'd go, yeah, I think we need a bump here. So you can blame me for that. But, yeah, so I got to sit here with the ride designer guy. And I also got to sit here when the sound technicians were here with the big soundboards. Mm-hmm. And they actually, wherever there's sound in here, there was a sound technician with big soundboard in here going through the different sounds, trying to make them, mixing it up and making sure it was just right.
When I didn't hear Riker talking, but I remember inside, you know, so
they would be inside where he was talking, like over the speakers and stuff like that.
Right.
Now, I'm looking around. We've got big speakers up on the ceiling.
Huge subwoofers back there.
There's stuff on the sides of the shuttles.
And also behind the screen, there are some big speaker banks. You know, so sound flows around freely.
Is that a Borg regeneration station I see behind there?
Yes, that is, actually. Remember, I told you we store stuff all over the place. Because nobody sees this stuff. So we got stuff from all over the place down here.
This is great.
How many hours a day did you work during the initial stages?
Oh, my God. You mean during construction?
Yeah.
I was here for, like, at least 12 hours a day. I got some very, very nice paychecks back then. Yeah, and even when it was all done and we were ramping it up, you know, we were doing rehearsals and stuff like that, and I was part of that core group, and then everybody had to come through and sign off on it. All the big Trek guys had to sign off on that, so that took a couple of weeks, and I was here day and night for weeks before we opened.
Like any other rollout startup, go live,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Especially
yes.
when you're behind schedule.
Encounter,
Borg invasion, 10-8 for the day. Okay, we're going to have to exit here because they're starting to run people through.
Very good.
Okay, so when is it closing? It's closing the beginning of September?
September 1st is our last day, and it's going to be quite a day because that's Labor Day. It's Monday, it's Labor Day, so we're going to have a lot of crowds. But at the end, after the very last rides, which, by the way, you can buy tickets for on eBay, there will be a decommissioning ceremony for the time station because the Federation would not just walk away from this place.
Of course.
You know, they have to decommission it because they're turning it over to 21st century, so we got to take all that technology and we can't leave anything that you guys would kill yourselves with, you know. So it's going to be very, very cool, pomp and circumstance, formal. Everybody will be called off the time station one by one.
Oh.
And, yes, it's going to be very cool, very cool.
There's
going
to be tears.
Yes, if you ever want to see a Vulcan cry, you should show up then, because I'm going to try to maintain, but I don't know, Professor DeBrill might lose it. So, because she's actually become fond of these humans.
You could use the Andorian character and just go.
No, I can't.
Take this job and.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. That her, because her attitude towards this place is completely different from Professor T'Pril. So it's just the whole idea of who would be here last. The Andorian would have taken off in the moon. Yeah. You know, she'd be like, I'm out of here. Bye bye.
Before all the good jobs are taken.
That's right. She's got things to do.
So. I figured there had to be something big to send it off because we saw the big opening, the pictures from the opening, and it had everybody here. It looked like a big grand opening, of course.
Are there any guests being called in for the
Yes, we do not know exactly who, but trust me, there will be. And there are people that have actually called from the studios and go, can we come? Yeah, sure.
Sweet.
Yes. Yes. I think they know how important it has been over the past decade. You know, so.
That's terrific. Well, we look forward to seeing news stories on that as well.
Ah, yes. Well, I don't think the time station will ever die. It will live on, you know, not like this, obviously, but certainly in the stories about it and in people's memory and certainly in mine.
This has been one of our favorite audio tours to do. Thank you very much, April.
Thank you. It's really nice to meet you guys.
I'm getting something on the distress channel.
Hi, Chuck and Craig. It's April Hebert from Star Trek The Experience. Only I guess I'm not from Star Trek The Experience anymore because, as you know, it closed a couple of days ago. And we're all still in shock and mourning. But I think that eventually we'll come to terms with it. Anyway, the last couple of days were bittersweet. People were coming out of the woodwork from all over the place just to come and pay tribute. And it was very, very touching. A lot of Star Trek love. And, you know, we'd have to peel them off the bar at the end of the night, you know, and throw them out because they didn't want to go. And, you know, people just coming up to me and thanking me for 10 years, you know, and, oh, gosh, I can't even tell you how wonderful it was. The last day, Paramount came in to film us, and they just filmed all over. They filmed the aliens putting on their makeup. They interviewed all of us, and there was just media from everywhere coming in to talk to us and, you know, see how we felt. And so it was pretty cool. Yeah, we had a lot of cameras following us around that day, so it was a little hard to, I mean, well, it was, I guess it made it a little bit easier, you know, because that way we kind of had to stay on top of things and not break down. There was a point at the day, well, I started the day as Commander Tarin, the Andorian female, and so I was walking around, and you know, she's pretty cranky, like I said, most of the time, you know, so she was just telling everybody she was thrilled to get out of there and no big deal, and you know, but some of the diehards at the bar were giving me a hard time, and it was really, really wonderful. And you know, as the time approached where she had to leave, there were people crying at the bar. You know, please don't go, Tarin, you know. And I was like, no, I got to go. I got things to do. I got to command my ship, you know. So I left, and a couple hours later, I came back as Professor T'Pril, you know, the calm, cool, collected Vulcan, and went out there. And I was doing really, really well. You know, I interviewed a couple of times with people. I walked around and, you know, talked to people about how they needed to be strong and that they should meditate like I did, and it would all be good. And, I fortunately, when I did this, I was kind of off to the side so nobody saw me, but I was walking around a corner and there was a little girl, maybe 4 years old, and I've seen her before. Her stepfather was a waiter at the bar, so she would come in all the time, and she loved the aliens, and she was very talkative and very, very smart, you know, just very verbal. And she just looked at me and she said, this place is going away, and I'm going to miss you, you know. And I started to say to her that she, you know, she would just was going to have to keep us in her heart. And I couldn't finish the sentence. I burst into tears, you know. So here's Professor T'Pril crying because this little 4-year-old girl got me. She got me. So I just knelt down and gave her a hug and walked away. And I guess she went up to Lynn, the Major. Kalen and was talking to her, and the little girl started to cry, so Major Kalen said to her, I do not want to see you leaking from the eyes. And she said, well, I made the other lady cry. And Major Kalen said, who's that? And she says, the Vulcan lady. And Major Kalen was like, great, Kalas, friends, they wouldn't stop it off to see if I was all right. But yeah, I had recovered by that point. Anyway, if you saw the video, and you can go onto YouTube and see video of the decommissioning ceremony. It's very touching, very touching. The entire ceremony was just beautiful. And I had requested that I be the last person off because, of course, I had been there the longest, so I thought it was only fitting. And I always said, you know, as the first person here, I'm going to turn the key in the lock and leave, you know. So they said that was perfectly fine, but I guess they had this plan the whole time and never told me. So they held me back after they let everybody go, and I'm like, why are you holding me back? I thought they were just going to say my name and I'd walk out there. Well, you know, then Susie Plaxton started to talk about how, you know, the first person on the ship is the last person to disembark, and they said my name, and everybody stood up and started yelling for me. There were 1,000 people out there. It was amazing. It was amazing. And, I walked down there, and they, you know, just felt that rush of love, And I went to walk away, and Chad Boutte stopped me. He says, don't go. Just stay here. And I'm like, what? No, stay here. Stay here. And then Susie started to talk about the flag, you know, the Federation banner that had flown over the time station for 10 years. And I looked down in Chad's arms, and he was cradling this flag that was wrapped up. And it dawned on me what it was, and I'd looked at that banner every day for 10 years and thought how beautiful it was, and I had no idea that they were going to do that. And I couldn't hold it back. I just could not. It was amazing. And he handed it to me. You know, I felt like somebody was giving me... I just knew that nobody was going to get anything from there. So the fact that they gave that to me, and it was amazing. And later, Jared and Lynn and Kirsten had written the ceremony, and they based it on an actual decommissioning ceremony. And one of the things that they found out during their research was that the person that had served the longest does get the ship's flag. And Jared was like, gee, that's too bad we don't have a flag. And then the second later, wait a minute, we have a flag. We've got a flag. So they got somebody to risk their life to cut it down off the wall, and then they gave it to Richard Oden, who took it to a dry cleaner who specialized in large items like that. And when that guy found out what it was for, he didn't charge them. He did it for free, you know. And so, I mean, it was just one wonderful thing after another. But, I'll tell you what we did there, they can try to do it again, but... It probably won't be. It's not going to be the same. So they might find something successful. But what we did was so special, so singular, that I am so proud to have been a part of it. So, as you can see, I'm still very emotional. Like I said, it'll probably take me, I don't know, what do they say after a big loss like that, 2 years? I'll be fine in 2 years. Call me again in 2 years. Anyway, you guys are great, and I had the best time with you. So I can't wait to hear the part two, and keep on trucking, you guys. That's what I'm gonna do. Bye.
Thank you, April, for that heartfelt message. We couldn't have asked for more. You are a saint, and keep on trekking. We will do, and we hope everybody else does. And this show will live on in infamy. No, something like that.
Geek for me.
We appreciate your support. If you like this show or any of the others we've put out, there are many ways to show your love. You can call the listener line, like April did, 206-222-2428. Then you can say, hey, I used the same phone number as she did.
That's right.
You can also email us at technorama@chuckchat.com. The website for all the goodness is www.chuckchat.com. If you're feeling really generous, how about a donation in the tip jar? Just check out the options on the website at chuckchat.com/technorama. You can also leave us a review on the iTunes Music Store. Add us as a favorite on Podcast Pickle. Vote for us on Podcast Alley. You know the usual stuff on all those directories out there. They're still there, and we still appreciate it. Thank you to the following people for donating their time and talent to keeping Technorama going, including Mad Marv, who provides all the great blog content during the week. This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. You can find out more at friendsintech.com. We're also affiliated with all of the great audio content over at farpointmedia.net. If you're getting this the old-fashioned way by clicking the link on the website, that's good, but we've got one better. You can subscribe and get the show automatically delivered to you for free. Just drop either one of us an email or click on the big fat question mark at the bottom of the chuckchat.com page and find out how. It's quick, free, and easy. Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama and a binary high five.
And to everybody at the Star Trek Experience,
101.
Course heading, Captain.
Second star to the right. And straight on till morning.